Mini episode 1720 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1620. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris coming at you with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, Jake Digman, and we are here to preview WrestleMania 40. We've been doing the WrestleMania preview together the last several years, and this is one where certainly this one is a lot less painful to preview because of the creative changes that have happened in the last 20 months or so. One of us might feel it's a little bit less painful than the other one, but that's the beauty of this thing here is getting the different perspectives involved. So I bring in my great friend, the great FDH Lounge dignitary, Jake Digman. Jake, great to have you on, buddy. This is going to be a very fun discussion.
Ricky, my friend, it is always a pleasure for me to be able to hang out in the FDH Lounge with you. Takes me back to the old days of hanging out in a rainy parking lot as I look out my driveway and the rain pours down here in a wonderful Ohio's day. And yes, my oh my, what a difference makes, you know, since the last time we did this, talking about WrestleMania last year to WrestleMania this year. A lot of crazy, hectic, busy week for me this week. Got a show of our own on Saturday, and I'm looking forward to just having a good time and spending some time talking to you about the grapples and talking about the matches tonight.
Well, and I tell you what, let's get a chance to, while we're at it here, let's get a plug in for said show on Saturday night. Take it away.
Cage Thunder Mixed Martial Arts based out of right here out of Akron, Ohio. Got a big event that's going to be taking place this Saturday night at Chaparral's in Akron, Ohio. I know the majority of people will probably be hearing this after the fact, but you can always catch up on all of the action from Cage Thunder. I am your master of ceremonies, and you can go to cagethundermma.com. That is cagethundermma.com. And if you happen to be listening to this Saturday night, you want to check us out on pay-per-view, just go head on over to the link from cagethundermma.com to Combat Sports Now's live broadcast. We got everything there for you to check everything out. And that's cagethundermma.com. Follow us on Facebook, Cage Thunder, or on Instagram, Cage Thunder MMA. Thanks for the plug.
No problem, buddy. And so, again, you'll be catching, I'm sure, what's going on Saturday night on a delayed basis here, as it were. Stay away from those spoilers, yo.
But my phone will be in airplane mode.
Yes, that's exactly the way that you want it to be. And we were talking about this off air a little bit here, just big picture kind of setting this up, that I do agree with you broadly speaking that, again, from the times that I've checked out what's going on, and I'm staying on top of everything that's going on with WWE, even if I'm not really watching much of the TV, and that as far as telling the stories, making more sense, everything like that, I do agree that is the case. I think you're a little bit more jazzed on the overall direction than I still am. I hate to think that I'm turning into one of these tribalists here, but I keep comparing them to AEW in a way that, to me, is unfavorable to WWE vis-a-vis the totality of the product. And again, and not to sound like comic book guy, but it comes down to, you know, sports entertainment versus pro wrestling. And at the end of the day, I'm a pro wrestling guy. So I get where you're coming from on that. My perspective is a little bit different in terms of I still want to see more. I still want to see them do better. And, you know, maybe they'll win me over if they keep going in this direction subsequently.
You know, wrestling is cyclical, as we talked about on the air, and it's one of those things where it's okay to be a fan of both. Heck, people can be a fan of, you know, when I was a young person and I had a lot more free time on my hands, if there was any kind of wrestling on there, I would have consumed it. Now, unfortunately, no knocking on the other ones. I just don't have time in the day. But, you know, there's just so much content out there. But it's just one of those things. I've never believed in the whole tribalism thing where, you know, I'm on this side and I'm on that side. It's like people like what they like and they don't like what they don't like. I told you off, right. off there, like, there are certain aspects of certain things about, you know, that I skip on AEW that, quite frankly, I skip the same stuff on WWE just because it doesn't interest me. The kind of people who are into that sort of thing, you know, cool. But, you know, that's the beauty of this is that we can have multiple flavors and multiple varieties out there. And I just have to say, as far as, you know, since we are here to talk about WWE, one day you and I should sit down and do a whole AEW show and from a different perspective of that. We always say that would be an interesting thing to do that one day. But from the WWE perspective of what we're headed into, as you, when we first talked off the air, you questioned the, you know, is this really the biggest WrestleMania of all time? Well, obviously, you know, that's hyperbole. But at the same time, you got to look at it this way. WrestleMania, the first one, was the biggest wrestling extravaganza of all time. WrestleMania 10, the biggest wrestling extravaganza of all time. 20, well, we don't talk about that one. 30, and then 20, I was there. It's where it all begins again. And they always come out, guns a-blazing for these decade numbers, you know. And one of the nice things with the new creative that's in control, that is at the head of things, and the new people in charge who have absolutely no problem with numbers, we got the access of big thing, you know, to a lot of old school fans. We can actually call it WrestleMania 40. You know, there's no fear of it sounding old. You know, it doesn't sound old. It sounds like it's something that's been around for a long time and it's been established. There's a humongous difference there. And going into this, I'm excited to go down the card with you because if you look at the history as an example of this, the WWF/WWE now, on those big decade anniversaries, they always come out big with something humongous, you know, like guns a-blazing. And a lot of times, if you look at it over the course of the years, it's a love letter to the smart fan. I don't know if it's intentional, but it's kind of always kind of been that way. You had, you know, one excluded. Okay, we'll take that one out. WrestleMania 10, you had the you know, Brett versus Owen. You had that Razor Shawn ladder match tore the house down, and you had Brett conquering over Yokozuna to become the champion, giving, like, you know, through the hardcore fans and the work rate fans, and the diehards were behind. You got WrestleMania 20. I mean, it is what it is. We can, you know, the show ended with Benoit Guerrero, who at the time, taking everything else afterwards out in that moment in time, were the representation of that movement. WrestleMania 30, you had the rise of Daniel Bryan, you know, in that moment, and the streak ending, which is another, like, whoa. But how big was that rise of Daniel Bryan, that those 70,000 people who were silent when the Undertaker lost to Brock Lesnar were all on their feet by the end of the night, which that, as a lifelong wrestling fan, you know, for the sake of this, WWE/WWF fan, that's what gets me excited for WrestleMania 40 going into this, that with a new regime behind it that makes me believe that, you know what, they're going to do something good that even, like, the most jaded of people look at and go, okay, I can't watch every week, but that was cool because they know a lot of eyes are going to be on it this weekend.
Sure, and I'm trying to keep an open mind on this as much as I possibly can, but I will say, like, if they were going to be taking your analogy and going all the way with it this time around, then you would have in the main event not Cody Rhodes, but it would be perhaps Finn Balor, perhaps Sami Zayn, let's get real weird with it here, Pete Dunne or Tyler Bate. Like, if they were going to go that far for the smart marks, they'd go in that direction. But I do hear you here, isn't it?
Okay, yeah. I mean, that's one of those things that's like, Cody Rhodes is main event money. You got to look at it that way. It's like Bret Hart was main event money. Daniel Bryan was. No, other than the smart marks, I'm going to be blunt about this. The casual person watching doesn't care about Tyler Bate, because they haven't done anything. It's like, to make an open criticism on this one, they haven't done anything to make you care about them, much like, you know, half the participants in that six-pack ladder match. Finn Balor, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it ain't 2016 anymore. He's not the Prince Devitt from New Japan. I honestly think he's been in the spot where he should be. It sucks that his run got, like, you know, he got injured when what could have been as that first Universal Championship run, but I don't know, it's where you and I are going to differ on this. Finn Balor reminds me of one of those guys that, once his contract's up, he's going to go to AEW, they're going to lose their mind that he's there as Prince Devitt, and he's going to get lost in the shuffle in a few weeks. I hate to say that, but that's just kind of what happens. I just think, you know, it's just, time catches up to us all, especially with that style. But I get, like, if it was 5 years ago, I would have totally agreed with you on Finn Balor. I think right now, Cody Rhodes is the way he appeals to, and he does have that little bit of the hardcore fans in there, even though I don't want to admit to it. You know, everybody, it was Cody Rhodes who led the AEW revolution. Let's not forget that.
True.
You know,
yes.
And him, every time he does this thing when he wins, like when he won the Royal Rumble, he did the Bullet Club sign, he did the Too Sweet sign, and he pointed at the sign. So it's one of those
right.
where he's still giving a nod to those people that are out there. I just think that's the best one that could hopefully try to do the best to please all mediums.
True. And speaking of Bullet Club, a guy that I left out of my previous note here was AJ Styles, that they were going to be going that far in a smart mark direction. But I hear you on this, and I do agree with you. I think Cody kind of bridges the casual fan and the smart mark a little more. I think he's more casual friendly than smart mark friendly, but that's kind of what WrestleMania is all about anyways here. So looking at this, looking at night one, and this is according to Wikipedia, the way they're structuring the card. I had heard this independently. We are leading off the card with Rhea Ripley defending the Women's World Championship against Becky Lynch, which this is clearly the biggest money match that they have on the women's side. Rhea Ripley really getting over with the mammy gimmick in the last year. Becky Lynch, enough said as far as her being over, generally speaking, throughout the last 5 years, 6 years. And very interesting that this is a match that is without the winner of the Women's Royal Rumble. And we'll talk about that when we get to night two. But it's a thing where winning the Women's Royal Rumble didn't do anything to put you in the most visible Women's Championship match. It puts you in the other match. This is the one that any of the fans of the women's division are looking to see this weekend. Certainly not the throwaway match that's on the show later on Saturday night.
I absolutely agree with everything you just said there. And this is the big money match in the women's division. They've done an outstanding job. And to her credit, Rhea Ripley, just has that crossover star appeal to her. The way she carries mm-hmm. us. She walks in the room, you see it, and I think we all realize, you know, Becky Lynch's role here is to get Mommy even bigger, bigger heights than where she already is, and I just don't see anybody anytime soon taking that women's championship off of Mommy, even if for a hot shot. I don't see what the point of it is. Just keep it on her and keep going with it. No one's bored of it. If anything, this could be like, you know, I could see this them trying to compete to match what Ripley did last year with Charlotte Flair. You know, they had a banger of a match that threw down because they were kind of felt a little jaded that they weren't in the main event, and I could understandably mm-hmm. go and see why they felt that way. I don't believe they should have been, but I can
right.
see why. I can see them trying to have a match like that, you know, to the level of where they're at, where, you know, especially with where Becky Lynch is after injuries and everything. But I could see, this ending with Mommy picking up the victory, Becky Lynch doing the handshake gimmick and planting the seeds for the eventual Rhea Ripley babyface turn. If she's not already a babyface, because if she ain't with the Judgment Day or Dirty Dom, she's pretty much a babyface. So I think this is just here to further that along to get so the fans can 100% be behind Mommy.
It probably is. And again, Becky Lynch, supposedly with her contract being up pretty soon, she says that it is, and she's not yet re-signed. If she somehow gets the win on Saturday night, we'll know that she's put pen to paper. But I think that outcome is the more likely one, because they're in a mode right now as a company, I think, as much as possible, of trying to build for the future. And when you're looking at the amount of city miles that are on Becky Lynch as far as a bump card versus Rhea Ripley, you know, you're definitely at a position where if you're looking to maximize one of these two, I'm not going to say Becky Lynch is necessarily bulletproof at this point, but after that god-awful heel run she had a couple of years ago, the fact that she's over again as a babyface, you know, it's not going to hurt her at all to take the pinfall in this one. She's had worse happen to her in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I forgot. I tried to block that awful heel run out of my mind. And at this point, you know, she had that big moment at WrestleMania 35, and ever since then, she's pretty much, no, I'm sorry, 36, she should have put Shayna Baszler over and didn't. Still kind of salty about that one. But especially with what we do after the fact. Yeah.
Yes.
And then, I'm not blaming her.
yeah.
You know, and then.
But I agree.
The past couple of years, you know, doing her best to build a Bianca Belair up, and then damage control last year, you know, trying to do what she can in that situation. So I think, you know, Becky Lynch does, goes all out to see what she can do sorry for the pun there, goes all out to help get mommy over even bigger than what she already is. And who knows, we have this conversation a year from now, we'll be talking about mommy still the champion, like I said.
Well, I'll see your, no pun intended there, and raise you one. Becky Lynch's babyface turn after that crappy heel run was definitely damage control on the part of WWE. Hey, now.
Amen.
Was. On to the next match, one that appears to be, performing gimmick infringement on the main event of Night 2. Historic champion in this match here, Gunther, the longest Intercontinental Champion of all time, against Sami Zayn. So doing the underdog gimmick, coming in here and trying to knock off the guy who's held the gold forever. You have one of these matches on each night of Mania. What's interesting is, again, is you go back to Vince's whole thing when he was there. Like, nobody remembers that crap, pal. Well, Sami Zayn's been Intercontinental Champion a couple of times before. This is not plowing new ground. Now, you could say it's plowing new ground in terms of the guy who was the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time and getting that dub, as opposed to Sami Zayn's previous wins. I guess there's a little bit of a fresh spin on that. A lot of people certainly would have liked to have seen Chad Gable in this spot. I'm pretty sympathetic to that point of view. What's very interesting is the way that they may be positioning this for, and we'll see if this gets over or not if they go this way, the Chad Gable heel turn of Sami Zayn stealing his opportunity. He costs him the match. Gunther lives to fight another day. I don't think they're toppling two unbeatable, quote-unquote, champions in one weekend. I think they have something bigger lined up for Gunther down the road. And maybe that's why they didn't do the Chad Gable match, because the pressure would be immense just to put the title on Gable here and now. But I think one way or another, Gunther comes out of this still with the title.
I agree with you. I think that this, going into it, I agree with everything you just said about the whole the kind of forced-in story last minute with Chad Gable being his coach. Like this past couple days, it's like, oh, he's his coach now. All right, it just screams like I see some kind of, you know, situation where Gable walks out on Sami Zayn that, you know, costs him the match. And my big issue with this is that, you know, I agree with you on the reason why they didn't do Gable is it would have meant that Gable would have had to win. Sami Zayn is there to lose. He is great in that gimmick, and, you know, and he'll make that crowd believe that he's going to, you know, beat him, and it's going to be a fun little match, but I don't think the finish is of any doubt here. My big issue is, you know me off camera, I wanted Brock Lesnar versus Gunther, and I still think we're going to get Brock Lesnar v. Gunther, because I could very easily see, because again, they're all about WrestleMania moments, and they did recently put Brock Lesnar back on the website, so he's not completely Benoit to history now. You know, they can mention him. He has been named. I don't know if you saw that. They took him off, like, the official WWE website, and they erased him. They put him back on. He's now as listed as an active superstar, as someone who's there. So I could very much see, as, you know, as long as the legal stuff is in the clear, I don't want to go down that road. It'd be a whole podcast on that stuff. But as long as he is, there's nothing legal that could be held against him other than his weird things, that he did not commit any crime in this. I don't think he should go down with the ship, and I could very easily see, after Gunther retains, him cutting a little bit of a promo about how he, you know, is the longest reigning champion, whatever, and he has conquered the conqueror. He's conquered everything. What's left? Cue Brock Lesnar comes out. You get that moment to stare down. And to be honest, I'm a little biased and selfish here. I would love to see that match at SummerSlam in Cleveland, Ohio. So as the fan of me, that, and you want to do something that that will make Gunther to another level, and it's a match that, quite frankly, I think a lot of people want to see. That's my issue I have with Sami Zayn, just knowing that we were pretty much going to get Brock versus Gunther in what would be the ultimate hoss fight. This just feels less than. I'm pretty sure Gunther has already beaten Sami on this run. Heck, I'd have taken a Braun Breaker. But again, with that, it goes into he would have had to have won. Like, Breaker, you couldn't bury Breaker. My only other one that I came up with, which would have been a spectacle match, is Omos, which people have been like, whoa. But it's one of those, like, again, it has that spectacle fight to it because it's something that hasn't been done. Gunther's already beaten Sami. I've seen this. And no matter how much they try to make me believe it's going to happen, I just don't. So I think Gunther, for the run he's been on and the work he's been doing, I think he deserved better, a better spot than what he's got here, but, you know, they're going to make the best of it. And that's not a knock on Sami Zayn. It's just there's a huge difference as far as, like, mainstream appeal from a Brock Lesnar level to a Sami Zayn level, which is unfortunate because had, you know, he kept that momentum from a year ago, this could have been absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When they beat him in Montreal, they kind of established a permanent ceiling on him. So when I go back to the first match, and I'm talking about Rhea Ripley can get to another level by beating Becky Lynch, and they know that. Is Sami Lynch, or Sami Zayn, Freudian slip, does he go to another level if he's the one that dethrones Gunther after this? I don't necessarily believe that that's the case, even though this would be a monumental win for anybody at this point. The buzz that I'm seeing online is that maybe they try and go the route of Warrior at SummerSlam 88, or Taz at the Garden, Royal Rumble 2000, debut Ilya Dragunov and beat him. I could see that. Run it back from NXT. So maybe Bash in Berlin. Maybe they go with that match at Bash in Berlin. But you and I both
I'm always here for some. Yeah, I'm always here for some more Ilya v. Gunther.
Yes, yes. And that's I'm seeing a little bit of buzz right now that that's what might be coming. Very interesting in the sense of, now then again, the NXT ratings have been a little bit softer recently here. On the one hand, you'd think maybe they want to keep Ilya Dragunov down there until they get launched on CW in the fall. But then again, maybe they're thinking that may or may not matter too much, because even though he's been very successful as champion, it's been at a period when the ratings have been going down somewhat. So who knows on that one. But we both seem to agree Gunther's going to win. I'd be surprised if we didn't both agree that we don't really care much about this next match here. Six-pack tag team ladder match for the undisputed WWE Tag Team Championship. Judgment Day champions versus DIY versus The Awesome Truth versus New Day versus A-Town Down Under versus New Catch Republic. And this is a thing where, again, all things being equal, I mean, I got time for a couple of these guys. I got a lot of time for New Catch Republic, although, I, you know, the smark in me wishes that they were still British Strong Style. But, you know, with them, certainly DIY, Judgment Day to whatever degree, you're polluting the match with the other three guys here. But, again, this is the whole thing of, and I think you pointed this out to me off here, that even during the boom period, like, they would still have these matches at Mania, like, let's just throw a bunch of these guys together. And the idealists like me and you, I think we sit here and go, you could probably find legitimate things to do up and down the card both nights with guys. But they're not even really trying. They're just throwing all these guys in here, and it's going to be what it's going to be.
I'm of the belief that this match only exists, one, to get the go all those guys a payday on the Mania card, and sure, two, to get the belts off of the Judgment Day. More importantly, Damian Priest, without them looking weak. Because ladder matches, yeah, to me are just like, are the scapegoat, because the champions don't ever lose. They try to make it like, oh,
right,
my God, it's this big thing. You don't actually pin or submit anybody. You just didn't climb fast enough. That's,
right,
if anything, that is one of the biggest things to, like, same thing with, like, last man standings, you know? It's one of those things that, like, protect the champion in this. And I think this is, you know, the only reason why this match exists. I heard something that they're going to use it to split up the tag belts again. I heard that, like, yesterday. Like, each show,
okay,
is going to get their own tag team titles again, which, okay, I don't know that they have. I think this match is kind of proof that they don't have enough over teams that they need two separate tag divisions like that, or two separate,
right,
tag belts, in my opinion. But if they do split them up, can we get new belts? These things have been hideous. How have they survived? These are, like, worse than the spinner belts. They're just hideously
ugly. Are they worse than the
ugly
tag pennies?
They are the tag pennies. They're just, like...
Are they still? Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're still the tag pennies.
I didn't realize they went back to the tag pennies. That shows you how much I'm paying attention.
Dude, one's blue and one's red, and they carry both of them around, and they have, like, the silver. They're hideous.
Okay.
They're, like, some of the worst designs. It's just, dude, I used to love the tag team titles back in, like, the 80s and 90s. Those are some of my favorite,
yeah,
belts of all time. You know, bring that back. But I, for the sake of this, if we're going to pick a winner, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't – I think this way. It doesn't really matter to me who wins, which is a sad indictment of the state of the tag team division, considering it was the main event of WrestleMania last year, which is the tag team,
yeah,
championship. The only thing,
yeah,
I know is the one who's going to lose are the Judgment Day.
Yes,
that's the only
thing
I know coming out of this. They're losing the belt, so, I mean, let's go with guys who aren't over whatsoever, but maybe they think this will get them over, and their hometown boys. Let's go with DIY. Hopefully DIY gets their NXT music back for this. I mean,
that'd
I don't understand
awesome
why they changed their – I don't understand. I could see, like, you know, under the previous administration why they had to, like, you know, tweak them, but, dude, go DIY was. So have them come out to that. But, I mean, it's amazing how little things like that can trigger an audience reaction. But, you know, maybe them, maybe, I don't remember, who else did you say was in it? Oh, New Catch Republic? That'd be sweet.
Yeah.
You know?
That'd be
some
awesome.
Of those guys, they can throw down. I'm okay with that. It'll be interesting to me. It'll be like, you know, you're that's the problem with ladder matches now. Once we've seen so many of them, there's only so many things they can do. So it's just going to be 12 guys pretending to not know how to climb and fall down for like 10 minutes till one of them climbs up and everyone goes, oh, they're just waiting to do the next thing. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't fast forward anything on the card, but I'm with you on this one. This one only exists to get the belts off the Judgment Day. And may whoever the new champions are, long be thy reign.
Well, the other thing is, and again, it's such a shame that this has been sort of relegated to the province of the smart marks, because anybody that cares about pro wrestling should care about logic or even sports entertainment, as it were. And the thing is, why do you have one set of tag team champions when you have two men's world champions, two women's world champions? Like, how do you explain that to your audience? I mean, it's the stupidest thing. One set of world tag team champions for the women, it makes no sense. You know, here they should be consistent one way or another, and so points for consistency if they split them up. But it'd be more ludicrous to split up the women's belts, which we'll get to in a moment.
I guess if we go with the one who's the most over with the audience, I guess it would have to be R-Truth, man.
Well,
the whole thing, people, it's the same shtick he's been doing, but people are behind it and people love it. And I mean, he's never had a Mania moment. I know R-Truth represents, I would like to think, everything you hate about pro wrestling.
Well, and here's the thing too, and you're going to give me a chance to make a horrible, tasteless pun. We're about to find out how much DNA in the Vince McMahon still has in this company. We know how much is in the Titan Tower offices, as will come out in the lawsuit. But if The Miz and R-Truth win this match, don't tell me it's not still Vince's company, bro. Don't tell me it's not still his company.
I can easily tell you it's not Vince's company. I can easily tell you it's not his company. He's not the only one there behind. Miz is lucky to be there in this one. He happened to be his partner years ago. Just based on audience reactions and what people see, you know, like they are the ageless one that is R-Truth. He's never been more over at any other point in his career. And quite frankly, none of those – the audience has flipped over so many more times now that there's just newer people that have come on board just like, you know, just – kids, as you said, you know, catering to kids. Kids see that. He's funny kind of thing. I'm not saying, you know, I know it's everything you hate about wrestling, but I wouldn't be surprised if it happened, and I would not for one second would it make you think, oh, this is still Vince's company. I don't know. There's nothing about that would I just don't see it. I just see it listening to, like, you know, it's a different era in of that. The fans are different fans, and for what is old is new again, I guess. But, you know,
well,
we shall see.
In terms of what's old is new again, not exactly for what I'm about to say. For anybody that goes way back with us to the Sports Talk Network days when you and I were the fifth Beatles of the greatest pro wrestling show of all time, Sunday Night Submission, you making me sound like comic book guy when we both would have sounded like comic book guy back in the day, like nothing makes me sound more like comic book guy than when I'm talking about R-Truth, and you get into the casuals, and that's where, again, I'm trying not to be tribalistic AEW guy, but it's just, I'm looking at, like, these effing casuals. Nothing makes me feel more like that than R-Truth and The Miz. I'm sorry.
And you know what? You're allowed to feel that way. That's what makes us fun.
Yes, and that's where the fact that we're diverging a little more from where we used to be just adds a little more spice to it. So there is that. Something that would make me sound like comic book guy again is whenever anybody would talk about the Usos as being the greatest tag team of all time. There will be this is the Usos explode, with all apologies to WrestleMania 5. Jey Uso versus Jimmy Uso. I got to work in my smarky references where I can, Jay Diggs. But as far as this one goes here, how WWE of them, here I go again, sounding all snarky, but a feud that began in earnest at SummerSlam, they found a way to drag it out to WrestleMania. Now, they used the brand split for doing that. They did establish Jey Uso on Raw in his own right in that period of time. Jimmy Uso, very odd character development. For people who are talking about what a great masterpiece the entire thing with the Bloodline has been the last couple of years, they've just had him basically do a 180 and go right back to where he was with no explanation for that whatsoever. This is one where I expect it to be Jey Uso that comes out on the winning end because he has more momentum behind him. Jimmy Uso is just back to being a plain and simple stooge, but I could be wrong.
First thing, I got to give props to how they've done handled Jey Uso as far as character development goes. And even going back into the Bloodline days with him there, he now is no longer just like, you know, one of the Usos. He actually has branched out and got himself over into that, you know, that upper mid-card level. That being said, I agree with everything your assessment on Jimmy Uso. He's just a guy who's there. He hasn't done anything.
Right.
He just, like, you know, they did a complete, like, there was no, oh, I don't want you to do this, okay. And he just, he super kicked Roman in the face, and then he'd act like none of this ever happened and went right back to being a lackey. And he's not even, like, you know, at this point, he's a lackey to Solo. He's, like, a lackey of a lackey.
Yeah.
You know? So the only thing I could possibly, Jimmy needs the win here. How he gets it, I don't know, but especially with what's going to happen later on in the night and on night two, Jimmy needs the win here, but I don't know. Flip a coin on which way this one could go. I really feel about it. My big question is, though, are we going to see Big Key sitting in the front row watching it, and then when the match is over, he just yells at both of his kids, because that would just entertain me. You know, just like,
get your act together.
You know, your brothers, get your act together. You get it out of your system, you know? Sometimes brothers fight. You get out of your system, good. Now go be family, which could play into events later on in the night. Who knows?
That would pop me. Maybe not as much as Scotty the Body being special referee for this match, but, you know, or Scotty Too Hottie, rather. I inadvertently made a Raven reference there of Scotty the Body. No, Scotty Too Hottie.
Scotty the Body, that'd be easy. That'd be
amazing. Yeah, that's what happens when I'm tired.
We know it won't be Grandmaster Sexay.
Yeah, we know it won't be. Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, RIP to him. Boy, that just brought this down in a hurry. but something that's not going to bring this up in a hurry is this next match here, the Jade Cargill debut match, as Bianca Belair, how the mighty have fallen, teams up in this throwaway match with Jade Cargill and Naomi against Damage Control, Dakota Kai, Asuka, and Kairi Sane. Actually, you know, you and I being big marks historically for Asuka, going back to when we saw her in Youngstown a long time ago, there's a couple of ones in this match where you could say how the mighty have fallen. You do have the tag team champions in a non-title six-woman tag team match. Jade Cargill's debut. I expect it to be with all due apology to the podcast that forever tore apart CM Punk and Colt Cabana, this is going to be the make Jade Cargill look strong match. And now she'll take the pinfall on somebody while using her usual limited moveset.
Yeah, I agree with you with that assessment that it's still thrown together. It's the second year in a row where they haven't, they pigeonholed in the women's tag team championship into a six-woman tag match as opposed to having the belts on be defended at Mania. And last year was even more weird because they had like a women's showcase four-way and they still didn't put the tag belts in that, which made no sense. I was like, if you're going to do this, you might as well just make it for the belts, but okay, that's here nor there. It's funny, you brought up, elements of Vince McMahon still being around. This is the match, to me, that screams, some of the Vince stuff that they need to get over. That being a trope of Vince McMahon's booking for years has always been, and unfortunately we're seeing it right here again, is that whenever somebody new debuts and they're all the same ethnicity, they must team together before they feud with each other. And we get that with this, and also, which we'll talk about later on for night two, with there's a little bit more of a story there with the Dirty Dom and his deadbeat dad in that match. But it's just one of those things that's continually I hope over time, we can get rid of you're of the same ethnicity or whatever it is, you must be on screen together kind of thing. And that was always a really bad crutch that I felt McMahon used. And I mean, if depends on how well, I would like to think that, especially with the tease they did at the Royal Rumble, that they were probably, looking to do a Jade Cargill v. Bianca Belair singles match. But unfortunately, and you can say with a sensitive spot, or what she did or did not learn at AEW, they just didn't feel that, her skills were up to to the level to be able to do a one-on-one match on that big of a stage. And Triple H himself said, we want to put Jade Cargill in every situation to succeed. And Bianca Belair, having started a mini undefeated streak of her own, I don't see it ending here unless they're feuding them right off the gate and they make a big deal out of, you know, Jade Cargill costing Bianca Belair her undefeated streak. But she's only like, I think, what, 4-0 or something like that. I say, you know,
I guess.
The baby faces win in a fashion, as you said, that's designed to make Jade Cargill look strong, and also Bianca Belair. And on the comment of Asuka, you said how the mighty has fallen. Every time I see her on TV, she comes out and just looks like she's having the time of her life, because I only say this because she's probably getting paid a lot of money to do very, very little. And you know what? Well, again, going back to the we're not young anymore kind of thing, I believe she's not 40. She's right around there, right around 40. That, you know, get the most you can. The most money you can while you can. And I just think, you know, every time we see her, we'll see her on TV, she just kind of has this, like, you know, she's just having fun kind of thing. I know it's not all about having fun, but, you know, that's just the perspective I get on that. She's going to go in there and have, you know, Asuka's had many, many a mania. Actually, no, she hasn't. Oh, I think about it. Every mania moment involves her losing pretty much. And the tradition will continue this Saturday.
Well, yeah, and that's where, when you were talking about Vince and the ethnicity thing, I almost thought you were going to go to the other side of the equation with Asuka and Kairi Sane, because it's a thing.
Oh, that's there too.
I mean, well, that's the thing. Like, you look at them and Io Sky, and it's one of these things where they take these Japanese women, and it's, for lack of a better term, they're doing like the Sonny Onofication of their Japanese women. Like, even now, even in the supposedly enlightened post-Vince WWE, you're still sort of, like, you know, mashing them into the stereotype Japanese, and they're sneaky, and it looks like, and that was a thing, too. And people used to always debate about whether Vince was, you know, overtly racist and how he put these things together or not. I think it's a thing where, far be it for me to, you know, argue against the man being evil after everything that's come out. But I always felt it was more just a simple-minded thing of, like, he can only relate to the lowest common denominator of anything. That's why he had to make Keith Lee the bear cat, because the whole thing, like, well, what's his gimmick? He's awesome. Like, people love, like, watching his moves. They love singing along with stuff. They love whatever. I don't get it. You got to have something simple people can grab onto. And it's like, and that's what he does. He takes the ethnicities. And it's a thing where, is it stereotypical and in some cases racist what they do? Yes, but it seems to stem from the whole thing of, like, they only think that's what people relate to. They think they know human nature enough to know that you can only get over if you're this simplistic, you know, sort of trope that people can relate to. And when I talk about, you know, and again, as distasteful as the phrase is, Vince's DNA still being in the company, this is one of the areas where I still think that you see it. And I'll really start to believe that they've changed in a significant way when I see them being a little more nuanced in their presentation of some of the competitors, as in, if I may say so, AEW. AEW is very nuanced in what they do with stuff. WWE, still not so much, and I think this is an example of that.
I agree with you, and I also agree with what you said about AEW, the way they present. And AEW is actually, like, one of the first promotions of American promotions, that is. This isn't just a Vince thing. This is going back throughout the history of professional wrestling.
Yes,
this is always
true.
How people of, like, you know, especially like Asians of Asian descent, how they've always been, you know, presented,
yes,
because they don't know any other way. You know, it's just
right.
One of those things that's, like, you know, I think it's stuck around, and it's one of those things that's, it's, you know, refreshing to see that, you know, one thing AEW could do better is to flesh out more of the character, other than he's a really good wrestler, because they do that a lot with all of, like, the Japanese guys. Like, Takeshita,
yes,
they've been doing an amazing job with, you know, building his character up. We'll go down the road with Okada. I don't know. We'll see how that plays out. But, you know,
yeah, we'll
just
see.
Yeah, but I think, you know, that's the only thing to AEW's credit. They don't rely on a lot of those tropes, but they also don't go beyond, like, you know, I still to this day have not been given a reason why I should care about Shibata nor, who's the other one? Minoru Suzuki. Everyone's like, oh my God, this is great. I'm like, they're old guys. If this was 10, 15 years ago, sure, but they're just old guys that come out and lose every match. It's not a dream match. It's just me seeing somebody face somebody if I already know what the outcome's going to be. But that's another show for another time.
Sure. Well, Suzuki and Ishii are both basically doing sort of the murder grandpa gimmick, which is kind of cool,
right.
But, you know,
yeah.
I agree with you. They are sort of like, you know, upper mid-card to mid-card gatekeepers, basically. They're not picking up any wins. They're just there to make other ones look good. So you go from this match that we've been talking about here, and I'm ignorant enough of geography to know, I don't believe New Zealand is considered part of the Australian continent. I believe it's considered to be part of Asia. So you're going with the gang war of the black girls against the Asians here, Dakota Kai, Asuka, and Kairi Sane, to sort of an internecine sort of race war here among Latins here, the Latino World Order, Rey Mysterio and Dragon Lee versus Santos Escobar and Dirty Dominic Mysterio, which, again, they're just basically microwaving the whole Dirty Dom and Rey thing, which we saw a year ago. What I will say optimistically, what I'm guessing that this match is here for, is the funny thing is they've been looking forever for the next Rey as far as it goes with appealing to the Hispanic community. And again, the funny thing is they tried to, you know, they created the great heel that they have in Dirty Dom by trying to force him into that spot where people just were power vomiting every time they saw him on TV. The guy who could be the next Rey in this company is Dragon Lee. He's the most legitimate contender they've had for that spot in a long time. And this goes back, I mean, this is maybe a decade and a half on how long they've been trying to do this. Alberto Del Rio at some point, certainly when they turned him face, they were hoping he'd be the next Rey as far as it goes. But I think that this is a whole thing here where this will be part of not exactly the passing of the torch, because Rey Mysterio is still going to be around, but that team goes over, Dragon Lee gets the pinfall, and we start to see him positioned as the lead Latino guy going forward.
I don't know what you're talking about. They already have. We don't need the next Rey Mysterio. We have the first Dominic Mysterio. All right. All this talk about trying to get, you know, the next Lucha, this Lucha, that Dom is money. And if you would have told me 2 years ago, wherever it was, when he was he went from the person I despised the most on the show because he was just boring and bland to the person over talking about character development, the most entertaining, one of my favorite people on the show to watch. Not gonna lie, just absolutely the way the crowd reacts to him, every single thing that has been the build-up to the match last year, and, you know, kind of even maintaining a lot of that. I do like coming out of the, you know, as we mentioned, the long-term storytelling. It's Rey Mysterio's fault that Santos Escobar is teaming with Dominic Mysterio, because they both realized just how much of, you know, a deadbeat and a bad leader Rey was going into this. I mean, it's quite frankly, everyone's always, first it was going to be Sin Cara, then it was going to be Del Rio, and they're always worried about, like, the next Rey Mysterio, there is never going to be another next Rey Mysterio, and no one really addresses this, but every time they look at it, they go, okay, here's another masked luchador that's going to come in. He's just going to come across as less than, especially if it's someone who's essentially doing the exact same gimmick, small Mighty Mouse, you know, one of Vince's things, a small Mighty Mouse gimmick of a guy who can get over like that and does lucha moves. He's always going to be compared to Rey Mysterio, which, like, we're going to totally disagree on this one, but I think Dom's the one that's more of the future than Dragon Lee. They've done nothing with Dragon Lee other than the fact that, okay, cool, he can do flippy moves. I've seen him cut a couple promos here and there, but it's like, I just feel like they're trying so hard, and it's like he just comes across as the wish off-brand version of a younger Rey Mysterio to me. I get what they're trying to do. The whole LWO thing. Everyone's just lumped in a group. Like, all of a sudden, it's just like, okay. If you're gonna, I figure they're lumping them all in a group so we could have got some, like, eight-man lucha tag match, which actually, made sense, you know, to see, like, let's do this. If you're going to do the flippy stuff, let's at least make the flippy stuff make sense, with, other than, like, you know, a gymnastic show. I would believe, like, a Dom-led team versus a Rey-led team, they could have pulled off something pretty cool about it. But instead, we got what we got. And I say Dom and Santos Escobar go over here. I say they pin Rey, and Rey puts his kid over to, you know, further that along. I see where you're coming from, but I'm taking the hard other side on this one. Based on his crowd reactions and everything else, you know, the way Dom wrestles, the Lucha WWE style, if that makes sense. I think he's okay. More personality, and I think there's, you know, long term more of an upside. I could be proven wrong, and we shall see.
Okay.
And 3, 2, 1, cue Rick vehemently yelling at me now.
Well, no, here's what I would look at here. They may very well do what you're saying, but there's no booking logic in it, because if this match isn't to give Dragon Lee the rub as the next Ray, why don't you have Carlito or some other schwab in this place here? You shouldn't have Dragon Lee in a match here where they're going to be taking the L, because he does have that upside.
Because Carlito can't do the flippy stuff, and the other guys have he's the best of the options. Don't get me wrong. I hope this showcases Dragon Lee and puts a spotlight on him. I just don't see the whole obsession with finding the new Rey Mysterio. I don't think it's ever going to happen. There was never a next Hulk Hogan. There was never a next Steve Austin. And as far as the biggest Latin lucha star in WWE history, there's never going to be a next one. And the more the next one looks just like the one he's replacing, again, I go back to he just comes across as less than. I mean, I think they'll do really cool moves. I think the crowd will chant, "This is awesome," the stuff they do. Maybe it's just a fan in me. I think, you know, I'm going with Dom on this one. But Team Dirty Dom and Santos, but I wouldn't be surprised, if Dragon Lee pulls out something amazing and gets the win. I just don't want Dirty Dom to take the fall. I don't know.
The absolute greatest Latin star in WWE history, unfortunately, is no longer with us. We have to take our hats off to the great Razor Ramon, the greatest Latin star in WWE history.
Hey, yo.
But I will say, too, in terms of looking at this match, if we're going to be talking about any parts of these shows, this show mimicking the Attitude Era, this is very reminiscent of Gang Wars 97. We should have Savio Vega as special referee if they're going to go down this path again of Latins versus Latins and that kind of stuff. Maybe
he
have
was just,
ball
he, was, he was just there last year. Don't give him any ideas.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's always a possibility here. So this match, whichever way it goes, I don't think it's going to be very consequential to the future of the company. The next match, not so much. The Bloodline with The Rock and Roman Reigns against Cody Rhodes and Seth freaking Rollins, the world champion on one side, the Universal Champion on the other side. This entire thing, I will say, now, again, in 98, they knew where they were going all along with Mike Tyson, but they played it off in such a chaotic kind of a fashion, successfully at that time here, to make you think that it was sort of blurring the lines a little bit. This one here, how it came to be this way, I think, again, they were caught unprepared by what the reaction was going to be of this thing. And we have seen a thing, you and I have talked about this over a period of time, that the last real vestiges of The Rock in WWE, and I say vestiges because it wasn't even all the way there, the 2011 to 2013 run with John Cena, you would still see glimpses of The Rock. Ever since then, bro, it's just been Dwayne Johnson doing his Rock impersonation and, Twitter hashtags and everything like that. And he hadn't actually – it took him becoming Hollywood Rock again to actually be The Rock in any kind of a way. And Hollywood Rock is just one manifestation of it, but it's maybe the purest manifestation of it. And the problem, as I've said before, with The Rock historically is, and this was a Vince thing, the white meatification of all the baby faces in the company. That's what led to him getting booed in 02, because he was already being kind of watered down as a baby face. And this is what's happened a lot of times previously. Now he's certainly over as a heel under these circumstances here. The way that this match is set up to go, it will either be a one-on-one match on Sunday night with Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns for the Universal title, or Bloodline rules. Here's the thing. I have a hard time seeing either of Rhodes or Rollins take the pin here, but feeling they're going to lose because we're hearing these rumors about there's some mysterious person on the call sheet for Sunday night. Whether that be Stone Cold Steve Austin, whether that be John Cena, the whole thing where we're meant to assume Bloodline rules means it's a foregone conclusion, but somebody comes out to save the day for Cody, and that's where, should it just be Cody going over clean without any shenanigans? Probably, but they're looking to set up future deals. They're looking to have a huge surprise. one way or another, I think the bloodline goes over in this match and paves the way for the big surprise Sunday night in the main event.
I agree with you. I mean, let's face facts. Every match has always been bloodline rules with Roman defending the title for the past two years.
Right.
Now we don't have to come up with the reason why the referee has been knocked out for 10 minutes and no other referee has been coming down. That's a thing that has just been played out to death. And I've been a fan of where they've been going with, but it's like, come on, man, do anything differently about this. So absolutely, we've got a this is going to be, you know, it's how I see Cody taking the pin, quite frankly. I see Roman Spear just to plant even more of those seeds of doubt in there. I see Rollins taking a beating in the match. Here's a little interesting thing that run by you is an interesting little scenario. I could see a scenario where The Rock is outside the ring, and he's got the weightlifting belt. But he's going to, like, basically whipping the crap out of Cody Rhodes, and he's going over to hand the belt, to give the belt to Mama Rhodes, when all of a sudden a hooded figure comes out from the audience and punches him, and, you know, the people go to, like, the security jumps on it, and they unmask, they take the hood down, and it is very much an AEW's Dustin Rhodes. Not Gold Dust, Dustin Rhodes. And if they do it, and there's been rumors of Dustin possibly making an appearance at this event, and, you know, something that would have never happened in the previous administration, a contracted wrestler to the complete opposite brand. But it would, you mentioned, you know, like blurring the lines a little bit. And don't have him get in the ring. Don't do an entrance music. Do anything like that. He just sucker punches The Rock. And during all the chaos of everything that's going on, that's when Roman hits the spear and gets the victory on him. But Dustin, have him get arrested, taken out of the building because he doesn't work there. And you could even do a thing like, you know, the next night and be like, hey, is you know, he goes, my brother's heart was bigger than what it was. You know, he's not going to be here tonight. Unfortunately, you know, he's been banned from the building, whatever the reason is. But, you know, he made that one phone call and he goes, oh, he called you? I goes, oh, no, I'm not the one he called. He made a phone call. And then that could lead into your surprise. So a little fantasy booking, but I think it'll be one of those, you know, mark out, oh, my God, holy shit, you never thought this was going to happen moments of something just as simple as a legend who you don't expect to be there getting involved in something like that.
Sure, and that's the thing. The only thing I would say to that, not to puncture your balloon, but in the pitch to Tony Khan, I see Tony Khan sitting there with one question. How does this benefit me / us? So that's why
Tony
I don't
Khan,
see it happen.
Tony Khan strikes me as a the kind of guy that is a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a fan. And if they say on commentary at WrestleMania, oh my God, it's AEW's Dustin Rhodes, just to make the moment happen. I mean, look at the other things he's done with the Forbidden Door and other things. What did he benefit from the Impact relationship? Really nothing. At the end of the day, when you look at as far as viewerships and everything else goes, I think it's just one of those. It will, if Tony Khan allows this to happen, allows Dustin to be a part of WrestleMania, no matter what the role is, while he's still under contract to AEW, it puts him in a huge babyface light. And at the end of the day, Tony Khan just strikes me as the kind of guy that's what he wants. He wants to be the anti-Vince McMahon, the one who's like the super babyface that gives back to the wrestling fans to give them the matches and moments they want. That's what he gets out of it.
Okay. And he's a guy who watched and marked out for many WrestleManias in his own youth to be connected to it in some kind of a way. Maybe I just think there's so much bad blood there, and I think, you know,
he let Jericho do the podcast with Austin. You know, there has been some precedents where stuff has happened where they've worked together in the past.
Not a WrestleMania main event.
True.
Yeah.
True. I'll give you, again. I'm just, you know, we're just spitballing some stuff here, but I think as far as like moments that would be like, oh my God, this is like a. It's all about, you know, WrestleMania moments and everything, you know, something like that. And the fact that, you know, they did reference, you know, Sting's retirement and stuff. We shall see. You know, we'll see if, you know, if times are truly a-changing.
Cool, and I think it would be a great way for him to basically, it would be a great message that he could send to all the bad faith trolls out there that are just out to bury AEW at all costs that they're not getting to him, because they are getting to him, and that's just fueling, you know, this ongoing kind of a cycle here. And, again, for him to get mentioned in the main event of WrestleMania, not Eric Bischoff, I would think would one-up Eazy-E and his ongoing war with him. So, you know, honestly, if somebody's going to give a winning pitch to Tony Khan, that's how you do it. is how much will Eric Bischoff, twice fired from there, be seething if you're the one that gets mentioned and he's not, after he's been carrying all this water for them with his war on you? That would be
Jake.
That's the way to make it happen, brother. I hope somebody in AEW can get in his ear, because that would be a pretty awesome scenario. And when we're looking at this here, I guess we're talking about back-to-back matches here for Seth freaking Rollins, albeit with maybe, what, 20 hours or so in between, because night two, right now they've got this as the leadoff match, him against Drew McIntyre for the World Heavyweight Championship. The wear and tear on Seth Rollins from the night before, from the knee injury that he has, all this is going to be a story here. And this is where I have to believe all the stuff with Drew McIntyre. And again, it would mean working the sheets. And unlike the rest of the idiots and the wrestling community here online, I don't hate Dave Meltzer. I respect him greatly. But it would mean that he and everybody else is being worked about Drew McIntyre's contract if he goes over, because Drew McIntyre is not walking out the champ if he is a lame duck. So that's what's kind of keeping me in a state of disbelief here somewhat. A lot of things are pointing to Drew McIntyre coming out of this with the championship. It sets up the match with Punk later on. I don't know that Seth Rollins needs the title for a big match with Punk. McIntyre kind of does. And actually, I guess if Punk is the guy to take it off McIntyre, then Rollins could be going after Punk to get it back. So this whole three-way kind of feud could be ongoing. It will be ongoing past this match. Punk is going to be on commentary for this match. And so, again, I have to believe that Drew McIntyre either has re-signed or is putting pen to paper Sunday night, because I believe he's walking out with the title, and this ongoing three-way program will roll through the summer and potentially beyond, since Punk may not even be back until at least SummerSlam.
So you and I agree somewhat, and we're going to disagree a lot on this one.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right.
I agree. I'm with you 100% up until, like, the story of Rollins' body will finally give out on him. From everything he's taken on, he'll – here's my – you know, this – I think it's going to be a great banger of a match. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to seeing it happen. Drew McIntyre's been doing some of his best work in the past few months. For those who haven't been seeing it, it's been – he's been on quite the run. The whole story of this building into it is from the – has that Drew has been upset that, you know, he didn't get his moment in front of the fans. And in his mind, as a true heel, everything he's done is right. Along the way, there's been little deals and things that have been spread through. He's been taunting CM Punk and taunting CM Punk going into this. Now we have a reason for CM Punk to be out there. Hear me out on this one. Drew McIntyre, you know, Rollins gets up, gets hit with a claymore, Rollins kicks out. All right, and he's still fighting with everything he's got in him, and, you know, even Punk on commentaries noticing the heart of Rollins. He gets hit with another one, barely gets up again. Finally, McIntyre's, you know, the third one is when he hits it all, you know, does the scream, boom, one, two, three. Drew McIntyre wins. He is your new World Heavyweight Champion. However, before he ever even gets the chance to get the belt or celebrate with it, whether it's CM Punk hits him from behind with a chair, whether CM Punk feigns going into the ring like he's going to hand him the belt and then waffles him in the face with it, CM Punk does something that finishes with whatever the reason is. We'll go with he hits him with the belt, takes him down, you get the Money in the Bank cash in. I say, you know, get the moment where he hits him in the head with the belt. I'll even low blow him. Do the, you know, low blow him, GTS, cash in, Damian Priest, one, two, three. When Drew McIntyre wakes back up, he's no longer the World Heavyweight Champion and has absolutely no idea what happened. And once again, he has been robbed of that moment in front of all the fans that he's wanted so desperately, with CM Punk laughing hysterically at him from the background as Damian Priest celebrates on the top of the stage. And this is the catalyst for the absolute full-blown Drew McIntyre going over the deep end and going, now he's already a heel now, but going full heel and turning on his fans, all the fans, and everybody that, quite frankly, they don't – he thought he needed that moment in front of them, but they don't deserve that moment from him because they supported all of these jackals who took it away from him. I just think there's so much more in Drew not getting it. And going back to the night before, it gives a reason to free up the tag titles off of Damian Priest, and then coming out at the other off of Judgment Day and coming out on the other side. You know, you got a couple ready-made feuds ready to go. You got Rollins taking some time off here, and just a different little pitch on it. I see where you're coming from, but I can just the whole magic of the way they, like, you know, to do WrestleMania moments of Drew winning the title in front of fans but never getting to hold it. I can just see that being something very much that they would do.
By the way, I want to, since you mentioned McIntyre not getting his moment in 2020, so the last great wrestling event that there was, basically, or one of the last ones before the pandemic, Royal Rumble 2020, watched it over your place. I remember remarking to you that night, like, what makes McIntyre this franchise babyface that they're building around now? Like, I they sort of randomly broke him off of his alliance with Shane O'Mac, and I don't even remember what necessarily precipitated that, but it just seemed very, very weird to me because they hadn't done anything to give him any kind of juice whatsoever at that point in time. So fans or no fans, I'm not sure that it would have – yeah, like they had him come out there with the sword and everything like that, which, again, you know, not to get all Eddie Kingston on you, but don't flash a piece if you're not going to use it, or is that John Moxley? Like, I don't like bringing out swords because you're insulting our intelligence. Why don't you bring out a machine gun while you're at it? You know, like, I don't like weapons that are not ever going to be used in any kind of a way. That whole run that he had was corny. But this thing now, I see your scenario when I raise you one. SummerSlam 97, because Punk at this point, I would say, hates McIntyre worse than he hates Rollins. Let's say you got a scenario late in the match where Punk goes to try to hit McIntyre with the belt but accidentally hits Rollins and is pissed off, but it gets a count of three. Sort of like, you know, the old Shawn and Brett deal, maybe. I don't know. But I like your scenario, and I can see it playing out that way. I think it's pretty plausible, and you have to find some kind of a way to get the belt on Damian Priest, because as much as they're talking about, well, maybe we won't give it to him, look, you got to give it a try. You got to try and see what you got in this guy. And again, I think he's got more shine at this point than he had when he went into Judgment Day. And he was a guy that I've always seen as having a lot of similarities to the way that they positioned the aforementioned Razor Ramon in there. That can he be sort of at that level as far as like a modern day equivalent of it? Of not like a big guy, but a bigger guy who can do cool moves and everything like that, at least a few of them. So I think it's plausible. And by the way, that championship, even though they've kept it on Rollins inexplicably the whole year, I never thought he'd make it the whole year with the belt, but he has. But they, unlike the Universal Championship, that one is not sacrosanct. That one is sort of more at the IC level. So ping-ponging it between a couple of guys and using it to take a chance on Damian Priest is certainly plausible for them, because the other belt, that's going to be the anchor belt probably on Netflix next year. This one's probably getting moved to SmackDown when SmackDown's on the USA Network. So, yeah, you might as well see what you got in Damian Priest under those circumstances.
I just the reason why I came up with this, it was actually the Royal Rumble scenario where it came out that the Braun Breaker spot was given to Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar was given to Braun Breaker. Like, literally, if you look at it, you just replace the role of Braun Breaker, you can see that's very much going to be Brock Lesnar. I think that the whole idea of this was for the cash-in was going to be with Punk and Rollins, when that was originally was the plan for the main event, and of that kind of like a takeoff of, you know, since Rollins did the heist of the century, for someone to do it to him as a takeoff of that. And I think what we've gotten instead is actually so much better than what that would have been, just if it plays out the way that, you know, I could very much see it playing out, especially with the work that Drew McIntyre has done leading the entire build up to this about, you know, him deserving his moment, and then that someone once again just taking it from him through absolutely no fault of his own, being the catalyst for this. So should be fun.
Yeah.
Or Seth Rollins wins and reigns for another year. Who knows?
I don't see that happening with the way that he's banged up, and I think that's part of the whole thing here, too. He's just got to get through Saturday night. He's got to get through Sunday night. Then he can go off and get whatever he needs done. What you're talking about, that's a great scenario, because it's the chaos of camouflaging the fact that you are not in all likelihood going to have Seth Rollins in the ring for many months. We know they're not going to have CM Punk in the ring for many months. That kind of chaotic moment that you're talking about, crowning Damian Priest, giving it to McIntyre but snatching it away quickly, that would be perfect, actually. That would be your scenario would be absolutely perfect. Something that has not necessarily been perfect, I would say, I think I made reference to this before, the positioning of the Women's Royal Rumble winner. So you have Bayley in this next match here going for the WWE Women's Championship against Io Sky. And that's a situation where, again, this the entire scenario of this match is Bayley getting turfed from Damage Control, the group that she founded. And it's one of these deals where, again, this match isn't nearly as big as the one with Bex and Mammy. But it's for the other, quote-unquote, Women's Championship. And, again, essentially it's a cool-down match on the card after the World Championship match at the top of the card. If we were doing a depth chart ranking the matches in terms of importance on this show, both nights, this wouldn't be in the top six of the 11 matches that have been set. And as a matter of, top seven of 13, what would it be, eighth, ninth maybe? So it's just, it's an unfortunate kind of, yeah, maybe. So, I mean, Bayley's whole kind of like, hey, now she's back as a babyface, which it's going to be completely different, and I haven't seen enough of her in this role. You know, I don't know that anybody has yet at this point to be able to kind of judge where it's going. But, like, Bayley as a mature babyface instead of the, you know, basically the overgrown kid version that she was before, I'm not sure that we're even still going to get a good read on how over she's going to be able to get as a result of this. I always feel like in a lot of instances when somebody does a heel turn or a face turn in reaction to somebody else, you can't really judge them until they get away from them. So my guess is they put the belt on Bayley, but we won't know how effective she is as a babyface until we get to her first post-damage control feud and see how her babyface character is fleshed out. Because right now it's just completely in reaction to being betrayed by her old group.
And nothing makes for a better baby face than the other mean kids don't want to hang out with you anymore. So now we have to like you. I always, this reminds me a lot of the run where they turned Seth Rollins baby face. And to me, when he was feuding with Triple H, to me, I always call that equivalent of like his dad told him he had to get a job now because he wasn't paying for our stuff anymore. Like, why do I care? Like, okay, like, Triple, like, why are all of a sudden you a good guy now because he's not helping you anymore? This makes no sense. Same thing with this feud right here. You know, there was like, you know, I mean, I guess they're making little subtle comments behind her, but all of a sudden it just felt so forced right after the Royal Rumble that, like, we have to have a reason for these two to have a match, and it's like, okay, great, but you were still being, like, a terrible person up to like the week of that. And I think, you know, the only thing I could very much see them manufacturing a babyface reaction by bringing the Bayley buddy thing back and doing like an updated, not her being the hugger, but bringing them in and doing like a combination of the two. Like, you know, she's like a more mature version of that character. But the problem is, it's just the way, you know, as much as I give the compliments for how great the storytelling has been, also going to, you know, dish out equally amount of criticism, the storytelling on this has just been terrible. I would have almost like preferred them still be in Damage Control going into WrestleMania and being like, are you going to turn on me? Are you not? Like, what is this? You know, I think it'd be rather than this, which is just like, you know, it's just the same old of like, you know, evil foreign bad guys are now turning on them, you know? And I very lackluster build, very poor job going the way we've gotten to where we're at, and very disheartening as far as, you know, when they're trying to get over the prestige of the Women's Royal Rumble. Hey, if you win the Women's Royal Rumble match, congratulations, you can be the cooldown match on night number two. That should never be the case, you know?
Yes, as opposed to the...
Not since Alberto Del Rio opened the show in 2012 or whatever it was, has a Royal Rumble winner ever looked any less significant?
Well, 2011, I remember in 2012, it was Sheamus with the 18-second match against Daniel
Bryan.
Oh,
okay, yes.
And
yes, okay.
He was
with
the Royal
Del Rio
Rumble winner. Two years in a row was the Royal Rumble winner. I got a couple things in reaction to what you said. First of all, yes, this entire storyline was programmed to appeal to every grandpa in America who could say, see, ever since Pearl Harbor, you can't trust any of them. That's what this storyline is geared towards, okay? And do I have any older relatives like that in my family? I absolutely do. One of my late great uncles, and even though he's passed away, I won't mention him by name. I'll show him that respect. But I remember, like, in 2001, when Ichiro came over, and on one of the broadcasts, they were like, oh, he could be the rookie of the year. He shouldn't be eligible. I go, what do you mean? You just mean he shouldn't be eligible because he played ball in Japan? No, he shouldn't be eligible to play in America. I'm like, whoa, okay. I mean, that's so.
Old wounds die hard.
Yes, old wounds die hard, and this is who this storyline is made for. Is every racist older person in America who just says Pearl Harbor every time a Japanese name comes up. So there's that.
I mean, hang on. If Corey Graves drops in a Gorilla Monsoon, she really Pearl Harbored her, then I'll say you're correct then.
Well, not under this PC ownership that they have right now. But I will say also, too, Bailey, I remember popping you a little over a decade ago when I was talking about that, about when she gets called up to the main roster with Vince needing to kind of lowest common denominator everything, that he was going to want the hugs to be of a more prurient nature. Hugs and chubs, Bailey! Hugs and chubs! Little did I know, right? So
maybe you did know the entire time. The things that were once funny are not just downright creepy. Yeah? It's
exactly,
like, ew.
Yeah, now you're right. I look back on that, and I kind of get the icks on that funny moment. But there is that, and you look at this, and again, this match, again, there's so much about this where it is just basically a throwaway. My guess is they put the belt on Bayley because they're committing to this whole, you know, quote-unquote babyface character and whatever it's going to be from here on in. And, you know, we'll see where that goes. And then that gives her – at the very least, I mean, those are going to be excellent matches going against any of the members of Damage Control. So, you know, if nothing else, you know, you're going to have that going, and you'll have the story of it going as well. So you're set up for them to basically be the this would be the homeless person's version of them being the Heenan family to her Hulk Hogan, I guess. But, you know, you take what you can get with these angles. So. Or the dollar store version of that, whichever you prefer. But the next match here, an aforementioned absolute friggin' legend, one of the great legends of the 21st century in pro wrestling, AJ Styles, in all likelihood being used to put over LA Knight, which, again, LA Knight is somebody that they see something in the future, however belatedly, because he's a guy who they let fumble around in the system for a period of time and let be on the indies for a long period of time without going, hey, this guy has charisma, which, I mean, Helen Keller could have told him that. But, again, I look at this, and it's like, and not to be that nerd on Twitter that says, I'm sure AJ Styles is looking at Bryan Danielson wrestling all these guys here, and all he's being used for now is like, hey, can we get a Grayson Waller match out of this guy? Or, hey, can he put over LA Knight at WrestleMania? So it is kind of a compare and contrast kind of a deal. I would say that AJ Styles' check is fatter than Bryan Danielson's, but I'm not sure about that. Danielson's got to be one of the highest paid guys in AEW. But be that as it may, you know, I'm sure this is going to be an excellent match. The crowd is going to be into LA Knight, but he's just a guy who's been sacrificed like Sami Zayn to the reign of terror of Roman Reigns over the last year. So who even knows what his upside still is? Who even knows how salvageable he's going to be? I guess we'll find out in a post-Roman on top world.
I can't add any more to that. I agree with everything you just said.
Okay, thank you.
Everything from, like, you brought up, the only thing I was going to comment on, you mentioned, like, you know, how AJ Styles is looking over the work that Bryan Danielson did, and my brain went to, no, AJ Styles is probably looking at his check. And I'm like, no, you brought that up, too. I literally have, you know, nothing else to go with on that one. Yeah. I will comment that, you know, it's, you know, LA Knight was on this meteoric rise that was, you know, at the end of last fall and has definitely, like, fizzled down a little bit. A lot of people were thinking this was going to be LA Knight against Logan Paul here. There's a lot of people, you know, talk about that to give him that big boost. I think they want to get, like, you know, a really good match out of him. AJ Styles is, you know, the person that can do that. He can get a good match with anybody. I agree with your assessment on him, one of the greatest of all time. World traveled, that being AJ Styles. You know, this is just one of those, like, I hate to say this, but this is, like, it's going to be a really good match, and it's going to be interesting. You know, it'll be fun to watch, but I just don't feel as I'm invested into it as I could have been. And it's not any fault of theirs. Like, they tried, and they're trying to do it. It's just like I see where they're going with it, but I don't know. I'm not as bought and sold as I could be, if that makes sense.
Sure. I mean, listen, on the whole, is it a moment worthy of AJ Styles kind of a scale here? Well, compared to another Shane O'Mac match, it certainly is. But
it sure does,
yeah,
to be great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If anything is a testament to the greatness of AJ Styles, I will put that match up. Sure, it's easy to have a great match with Samoa Joe or Christopher Daniels or Kurt Angle. He had a great match with Shane McMahon. What? good for him. And it wasn't from Shane's part, let me say that much.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's always what AJ Styles brings to bear in a match. And it's a circumstance where, again, you look at it, and I mean, in an alternate universe, he could be out there having those swank matches in AEW or New Japan again or anything like that. But, here he's kind of doing what he's doing, and at this point in time, it's basically, getting a nice fat check while he's putting other guys over. He is going to help make LA Knight bigger. But as far as LA Knight not seeming on the same level, let me amplify a point that was made by the aforementioned great Dave Meltzer, that in a post-diarrhea Dwayne world, as far as him being back, L.A. Knight, does he stand out as much? And if Ricky Starks is thinking about coming over, how's he going to stand out as much? You know what I mean? You got The Rock there. So it
right.
becomes a
they
little
come across
harder
as less,
to stand
it
out.
Goes back to the, it goes back to my thing as before about Rey Mysterio. It comes across as less than.
Yeah.
It comes across as cosplay.
As a guy who wants to see Ricky Starks stay in AEW, for me, this is the best thing that could have happened, because he's got to be looking at The Rock being over there and be like, maybe the grass isn't greener. So, I know The Rock is not going to be there on a regular basis, but look, he's on the board of directors. He's going to be there enough to where it's going to matter him being around as far as how these other guys end up working out here. I mentioned earlier, as far as R-Truth bringing out the comic book guy in me and my disdain towards casuals, I spoke too soon, because nobody does that with me like Logan Paul, the epitome to me of what used to be called X-Pac heat, unfairly, because Sean Waltman could work, and Sean Waltman, I think he just worked me into thinking he was as hateable a guy as he was. But Logan Paul just coming out there and being the prick that he is, and yes, I will admit that he has worked hard at his craft. He gets Randy Orton and Kevin Owens in a match here, and it's one of these things where, okay, we're going to put him in there with two of the biggest names in the company, and that makes it basically something of a spectacle. I always like to look at these shows and see how many of the matches are plausible semi-main event matches. And WrestleMania in the modern era, you've generally got at least 4 to 6 of them. This is clearly one of the semi-main event matches, the way it's being positioned, but you got a part-timer as the United States champion on the same show where you have not even a part-timer as your Universal champion. You talked about that before with Roman, the repetitiveness of every match is a bloodline rules match. I think that's the main reason they've only had him do maybe like, 3 matches in the last year, so as not to expose it worse. Although the way that the Jimmy Uso match at SummerSlam flopped like a wet fart shows you that Roman still, if anybody could get overexposed working 3 matches a year, it would be Roman Reigns at this point. But back to Logan Paul, who's at least going to have his working boots on, unlike Roman Reigns on a lot of occasions here. This is one where my guess is that he keeps the belt, because neither one of these guys necessarily needs it. Maybe they figure Kevin Owens, because he's a guy where, again, he got the match with Stone Cold a couple of years back. He's been in some big spots. He got to do the headbutt spot on Vince McMahon a couple of years ago. They look at him as one of the most reliable guys in the company. A lot less city miles on him than Randy Orton. My guess is Logan Paul goes over, but if he doesn't, I think it's going to be Kevin Owens, because I think they see him as having more mileage ahead of him at this point than Randy Orton.
So I was I had really no, opinion of Logan Paul before he got involved into wrestling, only because I didn't follow all his YouTube stuff, and I know a lot of people he did. I heard about it after the fact, and the stuff that he had done that really bothered a lot. lot of people and everything. And I got to say, if it's anybody who was born to be a pro wrestling heel, it's Logan Paul. Because that guy gets it, and, like, he gets how to rile people up at, like, an emotional level where they just don't like him. Like, and I think it's fantastic. I think he's done a tremendous job of all the, you know, quote-unquote part-timers or the guys that came in, you know, the celebrity wrestlers. He's easily the best of the bunch that's made that crossover that's come through. And he's done a really – the way he carries himself is just, you know, as a star. He has that aura about him. It depends on where they're going for if they want to get the United States title off of him. And this could be one of those situations where I agree with you, you know, your statement. If out of the two, Kevin Owens would be the one to win it, as you know, that would, I guess, benefit more from it,
right,
from winning the championship off of Logan Paul, especially if, you know, he could eat an RKO and a stunner or whatever the reason, however they get there, that someone protects him. I'm just intrigued to see, you know, where, and the reason I bring it up is where they're going for SummerSlam. Because I could very much see, and I guess I'm going to spoil my prediction for the main event, but I could very much see a scenario where they do Cody Rhodes v. Logan Paul in Cleveland. I'm not saying I want it. But I could see that being a scenario where they, you know, they go down that road, which very much I could also see them doing, you know, a Logan Paul and an LA Knight, you know, for the U.S. title. It all depends, really. But gun to my head, I'm going to say Logan Paul retains the championship.
Okay. Let me follow up on what you just said there. Would your prediction be, if it was that, and again, don't tell me this isn't still Vince's company if Logan Paul's in the SummerSlam main event, but are you predicting champion versus champion if they go that way?
No, I would predict a reason to get the champion. I would predict it would be just for the WWE championship. At some point,
right,
Logan would lose the U.S. title before he got there. Because still at the end of the day, he is still always going to be a part-timer. So, I mean, he's on more often than not now, but
yeah,
he's going to go back to doing his other thing. So, and the
amount,
I mean, they're not our people, but he does bring the eyes of the younger people that are, you know, that whole demographic that, again, is not catered to us. I get why he has the belt. I understand it. But the only way this whole thing works is if it's the eyes that we've been told he brings, if they are used to put the spotlight on somebody to make them a bigger star. And I just don't think Randy Orton definitely doesn't need it. He's in legend status. You know, he ain't getting any bigger. He's as big as he's going to get. And Kevin Owens I could see a scenario there, especially with the way everything you said, you know, from main eventing with Austin last year or a couple years ago, main eventing WrestleMania last year. I could very much see them, you know, giving Kevin Owens that moment where he, you know, hits that stunner and pins Logan Paul 1-2-3. But also, you know, do you want to have a stunner if you may be having a stunner later on in the night? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Well, that's true. That is definitely true. Now, I will say this, and again, not to give me just another reason to sound sour about the WWE product, but you said something there that it just occurred to me when you were saying this. So this was an original point on my part that I feel that I have to make because it popped into my head, is that with WWE, you have these times of like where, I don't want it to happen, but I did it for business reasons. The next time I ever say that about AEW will be the first. Again, there's still something of the whole thing of like the promotion being the heel. I don't think they've completely outgrown where they were in the 2010s and everything like that, because, you know, I mean, if Logan Paul keeps the belt, I guess it would sort of be the epitome, the purest manifestation of that we've ever seen, of like, I don't like it, but I guess for business purposes they might make more money that way. But, you know, what the hell? They are making – they're just printing money at this point. So I'm not trying to really put – yeah. I mean, I'm not pretending that I understand it or I get it or it's for me. I'm just – in a lot of ways, I'm just being forthright that so much of this isn't for me. And Logan Paul being the U.S. champion is one of the purest manifestations of that I can possibly see, is that, you know, this is – this. There will always be a ceiling on how much this company can be for me, basically, as a fan. And I think he just sort of underlines it right there. And so you get to the next match here, and we talked about before that Drew McIntyre having his whole time as champion being tainted by the pandemic. It was also tainted by that horrible match that he had with the inexplicable finish with Bobby Lashley in 2001 at Mania. The whole thing of like, but MVP distracted him at the end by calling out to him or whatever it was. So Drew has bounced back from that. I'm not sure that Bobby Lashley has bounced back from having a kind of, you know, mid time on top at best. He's now in this storyline here, the Pride. So he's there with Angelo Dawkins and Montez Ford. Spoiler alert, I'm going to guess that they're going to win the titles during Pride Month. You heard it here first. So they're out there with B-Fab. You like what I did there? They're running up against the final.
I pick up what you're putting down.
The final testament, Karrion Kross, Akam and Rezar with Scarlett and Paul Ellering. Now, I have said a lot of phrases that seem random in the history of pro wrestling. I don't know that I've ever said a phrase that sounded more random than with Scarlett and Paul Ellering. I mean, listen. I'm glad, okay? The kid in me is marking out for Paul Ellering being there in any capacity. But it's one of these things where, like, not have gotten us to believe. This is, we're going to have to do another show on this. You talked about doing one on AEW, and we should probably do it maybe in advance of All In London this year. But there's another one out there about how pro wrestling was in a coma from 01 to 2019. And we've seen so many things in the 2020s that even a couple of years ago we wouldn't have expected. That for Sting to be in one of the biggest matches of the decade, and some of these other guys that have come, you know, that Randy Orton would still be not just having a pulse, but be in some big matches here. Paul Ellering being on TV in the year of the Lord 2024, and yeah, in a cool down match at WrestleMania, whatever. But Paul Ellering in a WrestleMania match, that puts a smile on my face, even though it's a relatively meaningless match. My guess is this is where the Pride gets its heat back, but who knows?
So I was going to say this on this, and I was going to do the my assessment of this match was just three words: end this feud, just end it. I think this is going to be their come down match. I think this is going to be a quote unquote homage to ECW because it's a Philly street fight, whatever that is.
Sure.
End this. It's like I don't want to. Hell, Bobby Lashley versus Gunther would have been better. Would have been great, but at least it would have been something. You know?
Yeah.
I just, like, you know, he ain't no spring chicken. You know, that you know, there could have been some
right.
A better spot for him than everybody else. I just, what is the final testament? Isn't that just the Judgment Day? Like, isn't that the same
yeah.
thing? Don't they mean the same
well,
thing?
Well, it's the dollar like, store. Dollar store Judgment Day.
Right. Yeah, the dollar store. The company across says less than. You can't do the whole less than gimmick when the better version is already there. It's like, no, this is stupid. Just end it. I don't care. I you know what? Everyone said, you know, Karrion Kross was supposed to be something special in his NXT run. And then they're like, oh, they screwed him when he got to the main roster. Man. All right. And he was not. I worked the show with him. Very nice guy. I just don't see it. I don't see anything in it. It's just like, okay, I don't know. He reminds me of one of the guys that he reminds me of a guy who comes across bigger in a smaller place. But once he gets to a bigger place, like, I could see him being lost to, like, AEW Rampage or something like that, you know? Just, like, I just don't see anything in him. What are you? What is your...
Here's the thing, though. Like, in fairness... The presentation that he had in TNA and NXT, he's never had it on the main roster. And, again, I think letting his hair grow out is doing him no favors because I think it detracts from his aura. And I think trying to look like what he looked like at that point in time would probably be beneficial to him. But this is one of these things where, you know, it's for, what you're talking about with the final testament, you know, my pitch, you know, would be is to have Stephanie McMahon come back as general manager of SmackDown. And then she can have one of their kids debut on screen. And, you know, like when the final testament is out there, have one of the kids start whining, Mom, I want the Judgment Day. Just so Stephanie and her mom mode can say, we have the Judgment Day at home.
You put a lot of thought into that one.
A swing and a miss, buddy. Well, what the hell? I put a lot of thought into it. Much
all
like with Johnny Carson,
we've spent way too much time on this match.
Yeah, yeah. Well, much like with Johnny Carson, sometimes the finest moments come off of a real bomb that's there. So we got to laugh out of what a bomb that was.
They can't all be winners.
They can't all be winners. They can't. But we go to the main event here, and the endless title reign that will not die, Roman Reigns, again, for the they keep calling it undisputed WWE Universal Championship, even though again, they now have a – well, at a time when they still have a world title as well. So classic
right.
Fed mentality. But, again, stipulation to be determined by what happens in the main event of night one. So, again, you and I are on record as saying that this is probably going to be a thing where – because, again, here's the deal, and this is where I'm now more convinced that it's going to be the whole bloodline rules kind of a deal, because there's no reason whatsoever to have The Rock out there in this match. You'd have to basically embellish something for him to be out there if it's not bloodline rules. So that's a deal where, again, this entire thing here and these rumors that are kind of coming out about, you know, that Stone Cold or Cena, those are the names that you keep hearing at this point in time. By the way, again, what I said before about Paul Ellering and Sting in the year 2024, The Rock in a WrestleMania main event match, we've already had Stone Cold come back at WrestleMania in 2022. So this has been a decade where, again, it's not just that, like, 10 years ago we wouldn't have believed it. You know, 15, 20 years ago, we wouldn't have believed that some of these names being as relevant as they are. And this is a thing where you look at it and, like, if The Rock comes out here and does this, it's one of those things where you had The Rock against Kevin Owens, and that was sort of like a passion project for him, right? Because he likes Kevin Owens the same way that he would have liked to have done a CM Punk match, and maybe that's still in the future now with CM Punk being here. Yet another name that we wouldn't have believed a couple of years ago would still be relevant in 2024. But you can do your passion project matches, but The Rock and Stone Cold at next year's WrestleMania? I mean, or SummerSlam this year?
No.
You don't think so?
No. No, not at all. The only place I could ever see that happening is – no. The only place I could ever see that happening is Saudi Arabia, unfortunately.
Okay,
it
well.
It has to be a big break strike. No, I think we're going to continue the story going here. So are we on the same page that we think Cody Rhodes is winning, correct?
I think so, yeah. I mean, but I thought
okay.
So last year, so what do I know?
Right. We both did. I mean, yeah. So
yeah.
My take on this one, I do believe that it's going to be bloodline rules because you don't offer that and then take it away. Nobody's going to want to see a one-on-one match because everyone knows it's not going to be one-on-one anyway. So let's just cut the BS and just, you know, let's do the bloodline rules on this. I think what my we are going to see – what I have determined or was calling to a friend of mine, the ghosts of Rock's WrestleMania's past getting involved in this to offset and have Cody Rhodes' back. That being, and they love to do this, I don't know what the reason to have him, but Hulk Hogan will be there as a representation of WrestleMania 1, even if it's something as like, you know, a Hulk up on the stage or whatever it is to prevent Jimmy Uso from getting involved in this. John Cena
okay.
and Stone Cold Steve Austin. Just to have that moment where he's standing there and all of a sudden that glass shatters and Rock does like the oh shit look.
Okay.
At the end, no matter all the fluff that happens, kind of I hate to compare it to Sting and Triple H, but I'm going to. no matter what the outside gaga is on this one, the story that has to end is Cody Rhodes is the one who gets the one-on-one moment with Roman. I could very much see once everyone peters out and goes away, and you know, if he has a ring to just it has to be those two. No one else can touch Roman but Cody. That's the only
Agreed.
Way to save face on this. It has to be Cody.
Yeah.
You know, I could even see like a false finish where all of a sudden like the spear gets hit, you know, one, two, you think it's over, Cody kicks out, and then when he catches him with much similar to how he did with Brock, instead of the three crossroads, hell, do four, you know, because he's like the
okay.
super baddie. One, two, three, that's when you get the moment, and it furthers the seeds of to build towards, I still think we're building towards Rock v. Roman here, and
yeah.
It was all of Rock's demons that came to cost Roman his title and the match. Had nothing to do with Roman. It was from Rock running his mouth this entire time that all of the demons of his past came to roost. And then that's when that leads to, like, you know, the much bigger match between those two, which then the match would make sense. as opposed to what they were trying to give us to begin with. Whether they hold that off for another year at WrestleMania next year, whether they do that at SummerSlam, hell, whether they do it in Saudi Arabia, that I don't know. I just don't think this is lead. Steve Austin will be a one-off appearance, as kind of like, because it is WrestleMania 40, an homage, and the WWE likes to do crazy things, and if you have Hogan and Cena involved, they can do the whole, oh my God, it's the three still living members of WWE's Mount Rushmore, because we can't have Bruno, but... And, whether they are or not is of opinion and conjecture, but I could very much see them going that road. And your final shot that you get at WrestleMania is Cody Rhodes holding up that championship after, you know, he presents it to his mom, as he promised he would. He's in the ring, and he looks up, and you see the image of Dusty holding the championship. And that's how you end the show. Confetti falling, okay. Cody crying, you know, his family coming. We get Brandy, his family coming into the ring and everything, but, like, he finally did it. And then the next night on Raw, the Universal Championship has been officially retired, and it's just the WWE Championship.
Okay. That part of it is great. Cody can also have his cut-rate version of Larry the Dog in the ring with him there, too. He can have his dog in there.
Pharaoh?
And, yeah, whatever the name is. And by the way, if we're I have a couple thoughts on what you said there. One is that if we're talking, and this makes sense because it's Bloodline rules, he could be there anyways. Can we get Rikishi in the old Sultan costume if we're going to be doing, you know, the ghosts of rock past at WrestleMania? How about that?
So I pitched this to a friend of mine, right? And his okay. reaction was, so are the Sultan and Eric Rowan going to be there too?
Yeah. Whoever this is, whether it's your friend Adam, or somebody else.
No, it wasn't him, but okay. So, and I'm like, well, hell, you know, I guess we got to get Evolution while we're at it, but, you know, we're not going literally all of them. We're just going with the ones who are the Mount Rushmores, you know.
Yeah, great minds think alike. By the way, speaking of Evolution, you talked about this before with Bailey, like, worst face turn in history, Randy Orton the night after SummerSlam 04. When he's out there insulting the crowd at the beginning of the night, acting like he's better than everybody else, and then gets turned on at the end of the night, and we're supposed to cheer for him. So that was – I'd forgotten to mention that at the time, but worst face turn of all time was the way that one came off. But this one here, it would be hard to do this under Bloodline rules. I don't quite know how you do it, but you talk about injecting drama into a match and paying tribute to the history. What if Roman initially wins the match – but loses it on a dusty finish? How about that?
That would be fun, but I don't know if there's any way to get to how you do it. But I see what you're doing there. That would be fun.
Yeah. Thank you.
The problem is, I don't think anybody would vote. I think it would go over like the ending of Miz v. Cena when there was a double count out. Not one person in that building believed that was the actual finish.
Yeah, that's true. And this is a thing where, again, it's a chance to really solidly build Cody as this huge hero that they're hoping that he can be. And so, yeah, it's a thing where – and I really felt like it was suicidal what they did a year ago, not putting the title on him. If they pull the trigger Sunday, and what they did a year ago makes us still say if, but, again, that would put us in a situation here where, you know, we are set up to go forward potentially very, very strongly with him as a full-time champion. And, again, probably – you're looking at, I think, him and Roman getting moved to Raw in advance of the show going to Netflix next year. Now, where the show's going to be at the end of the year for the last month to 6 weeks of the year, however long it's going to be, who even knows. But as far as that goes, let's just get one thought from you here, bringing it all the way around. I've seen some conjecture here. That Hollywood Rock has been so effective that when you do the Rock-Roman feud, it's actually with Roman as the face. What say you?
I could see that happening. I think it's going to be one of those. I think it, you know, it depends on where they go with this. You know, if they double down on the narcissistic Roman part of his character. But, yeah, I can very much see it being, you know, Final Boss Rock is my favorite version of him ever. Maybe it's just, you know, recency bias, but it's been amazing. Like, he's dropping F-bombs. It's been great. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I feel like, you know, he's not just catering to, we always complain, I'm always catering to children. He hasn't been catering to children, you know? And, like, the little things, like when he sings the Moana song in a promo, that's money. Absolutely love it. But, yeah, I could – I could see them very much going back to. I think it'll be like, I really do think it'd be a Shades of Grey kind of thing, where it's just gonna be like, you know, you, whichever side you want to. Not, I mean, I'm not saying he's gonna. Brock will be more babyface-ish, I think, on it, but also have like the heel. I don't know.
Well, Heyman's gonna be with somebody though. It's not gonna be. It can't be Shades of Grey because Heyman's gonna be with one of them. So
yeah,
whichever
true.
One he's with. That's going to be a thing, and yeah, I'm looking at it here.
By the way, things you didn't have on your 2024 bingo card, Paul Heyman, The Rock as a Paul Heyman guy. What?
Well, yeah, and then you look at it as well with these guys here, and it is one of these deals where, you know, the one thing with The Rock, this has been, again, he's been channeling Hollywood Rock of 03, and it's been going very, very well in that regard. But the one thing you didn't have in 03 was all of his outside business ventures, to where he's going on CNBC and doing the shtick of like, oh, I'm Dwayne Johnson playing a bad guy on TV. So that's like, again, breaking the fourth wall in that way that he still has to do to maintain his babyface status to the public and keep himself viable as a future presidential candidate. That part of it I could do without, but you probably already knew that, Jake Digman.
Absolutely. And I got to tell you, this has been fun.
It has been, and I truly, truly appreciate it. Jake Digman previewing WrestleMania 40 with us here. And please mention it one more time this Saturday night here whilst you've got night one of WrestleMania going on. If you're in Northeast Ohio, you have a chance to see a quote-unquote real combat to speculate. It's real. I just say that in a way where I'm not looking to demean pro wrestling the way that pro wrestling haters are. But talk about that one more time, Jake Digman, the show that you will be up there and you'll have the monkey suit on for and emceeing.
It is this Saturday night, and it's Cage Thunder MMA presents Cage Thunder 26, a night of professional and amateur mixed martial arts. We've got four pro fights, I believe 11 amateur fights will be going taking place. It's going to be at the Chaparrales in Akron, Ohio. Tickets are available at CageThunderMMA.com. You can also check it out on pay-per-view via Combat Sports Now. The direct link is at CageThunderMMA.com. And we've done a really cool thing, which is kind of different for mixed martial arts. For the year 2024, their first year, we've implemented something called the Cage Thunder Cup, where each team that competes in a bout, the fighter has an opportunity to earn a certain amount of points for their team, for said gym. So if you get a first-round finish, you get 10 points. If you get a second or any later round finish, you get 8. A unanimous decision victory is 5, and a split decision victory will net you 3 points. And we're keeping a tally of all the points throughout the entire year, going from until our December event in Canton, Ohio, and the team with the most points at the end of the year will be crowned the 2024 Cage Thunder Cup champion, and also will be taking home the Cage Thunder Cup that's being commissioned, as well as a prize to that gym as well. So this Saturday night in Akron, Ohio, is going to be stage 2 of the 2024 Cage Thunder Cup. We're pretty excited with the fan response to this and kind of getting behind their teams and whatnot, adding a little more, another layer to the sport of mixed martial arts other than, you know, anybody who follows MMA, it's two guys that are in there that are competing against one another, but it is very much teams that get those guys ready to prepare, and this is kind of our way to acknowledge those teams that are what make the sport what it is. So,
well, and
I've
been to a couple of the shows over the years that you've announced at, and it's interesting because you're talking about something that just builds on an already existing element, because at just about every show I've been at, there's been a sort of team thing in the crowd as far as the gym that these guys train at, and this whole kind of tribalistic thing of we're going to show up, we're going to cheer on our guy. So it's been cool to see that part of it there already. So this just kind of builds on what's already there as far as the way that different groups of fighters can identify with one another. And again, when it comes to MMA ring announcing, when it comes to pro wrestling talk on a show such as this, Jake Digman, you are the final boss. And it is always a true pleasure and honor to have you on talking this stuff. Thank you so much, pal.
Thank you, sir.
Really appreciate it, Jake. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode 1620.